You are about to listen to an episode of The Cypher before it was The Cypher. For our first 75 episodes, we were known as Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, and we had a slightly different format. In all honesty, our production value and sound quality today is much improved from these early episodes. That said, the content is so great that these shows are a valuable part of our archive. If you want more information about our transition, make sure to check out episode 76 with Ritz, which was our first one under the new name. To keep up to date on everything involving The Cypher, visit us online at thecyphershow.com or find us on iTunes. And now, without further ado, here's The Cypher before The Cypher. Welcome to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, a weekly series that brings you exclusive, in-depth conversations with some of the most interesting and exciting artists in hip-hop. We're brought to you by RapGenius.com, your source on the internet for decoding, annotating, and analyzing rap lyrics. I'm your host, same old Sean. On this episode, we talk to Fourth Pyramid. Pyramid is a rapper and producer out of Toronto, Canada, who has had a wide-ranging and fascinating life and career. In addition to being an artist, his superb album, The Pyramid Scheme, was released this past spring. He has had extensive behind-the-scenes time as a producer and event host. He got his start producing for and touring with the artists on the seminal underground record label Definitive Jux, and has continued to work with a who's who of people in the rap industry, from Big Daddy Kane to MF Doom to the Wu-Tang Clan's You God. We talked to Pyramid at a coffee shop near the Rap Genius offices in Brooklyn. Since, as you might have guessed from his name, Pyramid is of Egyptian descent, we started by asking him about the then-just-completed presidential election in that country. So I wanted to start out, since we're talking actually on the just about to the minute this just ended. I know you have Egyptian heritage.
Yeah.
I was wondering what your feelings were about the election.
I mean, you know, I think it's a step in the right direction. It's like one step forward, I feel, and like two steps back, though, over there. I don't really know. I mean, me personally, I'm of like Coptic descent, so it's like the Christian faction. So I know like the people in power have been sort of, you know, persecuting my people a bit. So that's like a tricky one because I'm of Egyptian descent, but I've never really lived there. I've never really been a part of the culture like that. But from the outside looking in, I mean, you know, I'm not like thrilled about it, to be perfectly honest, you know, but it is what it is. I mean, it's better than, you know, like I've been out there before and it was like a straight dictatorship. Like the president had like his paintings on every wall, you know, it was just like straight propaganda. So I'm happy they got rid of that. Just not sure if the people that they put in power are like necessarily the best choice.
Sure. There's definitely been some problems with the military.
Kind of
not wanting to relinquish power.
Yeah. I mean, it's a mess over there, but you know, it's usually like that after a revolution.
Right? Okay. Well, and on a, you know, closer to home note, congratulations on your record
and
release this past spring.
Yeah, man. It's on my new imprint called Silk Ivory, and we just cut a deal with Universal. So it's been good, man. It's definitely been a different chapter for me, man, coming from the indie world and sort of moving into the major world. But, you know, I feel like the indie world got me real ready for this, you know?
Yeah. Now, I know you've had a long career, you know, both kind of behind the scenes and in front of the camera and all that kind of stuff. Was it tough moving from like a sort of the producer and host and side of things to more of a performer role, or have you always done both?
I mean, honestly, I started as a producer. So for me, it was like a matter of like the first CD I put out independently was just an all instrumental CD. And that's kind of like a cult classic. You know, you go on eBay, it's up there for like $50 and stuff, and it's sort of taken a life as its own.
Yeah.
But I quickly realized, like, you know, if I wanted to, like, you know, keep my career going, it's kind of hard just to be a producer. So that's where the rapping came in. But I'd always been writing, even when I was a producer, I was just writing songs a lot. So it wasn't too crazy, you know, it wasn't like a huge jump.
Was it a different? Do you need a different kind of personality? Most producers I know aren't really outgoing people.
Yeah, I mean, you do. But, like, I have both sides, I feel like. You know, like, some days I like to be a hermit and just sit in my pajamas all day. And then some days, like, I like to go on, like, 4-day benders and not go home, you know?
Right.
So you know, you do a little bit of both. For me, it works out, and you know, I just put on whatever cap I need to put on, you know. But I definitely think being a producer makes you a better rapper. I believe that.
Okay. Now, this being Rap Genius,
yes,
obviously,
we
have to specifically ask you about a couple lyrics.
Let's do it.
The very first one is from Lookout. You say, my mind thinks of shit like llamas in space. And how are the llamas in space doing?
It was a monthly party I started in Toronto. It was just like a little party at this bar called the Red Light. And we just called it Llamas in Space. And it was like this open format, crazy party. You know, I DJ as well. So for me, it was just like a little bug out, like little 80-person house party kind of vibe. So, you know, the line was, my mind thinks of shit like llamas in space, because, you know, that was the party name. And I have no real rationale for why I came up with that party name. Plus, nice. The flyers were really funny. They'd be like llamas, like superimposed in space.
Nice.
And, you know, it was funny.
That sounds great. You do the Shane Brothers thing.
Shane Brothers,
a DJ.
Yeah, it's
thing.
Me and my man Cosmo Baker, you know, of The Rub. And we put out a record as well. And it's also, I got a record with Shane Brothers on my album with Greg Nice. And
Which is a fantastic song.
Thank you. It's
super
so hot.
Super fun, like, party record.
Yeah, actually recorded, like, we did the video next door up at Public Assembly and all that. So this whole hood was actually right in the mix. Greg Nice is on there from Nice and Smooth.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's definitely a party record, man. You know, I had to do a few party records just to let people know, you know.
Absolutely. The other lyric I wanted to ask you about is from Web Slinger.
Uh-huh.
You say, you know, a lot of hip-hop, especially, you know, from kind of the Puffy era on, has been very materialistic, right? And you have this line, got the oceans and trees, I don't need to floss.
Got the ocean and... What did I say? Got the ocean trees, I don't need to floss. Too many streets, too many airplanes. I don't even know my own rap. It's probably bad for rap. I mean, you know what? I was in Miami when I came up with that line. And it was just like, you know, I got the oceans, I got the trees. I don't need to be, you know, that's all I really need, man. You're balling out, man. You got some oceans and some trees, you're a made man, man, at the end of the day. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'd rather have that. No, I'd rather have $1 million. I'm lying.
And one final lyric that really caught my attention on Gotta Creep Quick. You say Young G's with swag. It's the craft that you're missing.
Yeah, you know.
And so you got this whole paradigm that happened, you know, in recent years where people come out, they get a lot of hype right away. They're the next big thing. And I was just wondering your thoughts about that, because you sort of saw the industry before that, and now you're sort of seeing,
you know,
that
what
happen.
Swag was always there, and you know, I think a lot of people misinterpret like swag or whatever. Slick Rick had swag, you know what I mean? If you want to get mad at like little kids popping off and flossing, get mad at Slick Rick, you know. And I think in rap a lot, especially the underground scene, there's always like a double standard of like, oh well, this guy, you know. But we love Slick Rick, and I love Slick Rick. I'm not throwing him under the bus, but you know, I mean, I said that line really because especially now it's like these 20-year-olds get a Tumblr page, and you know, they're the best at everything internet related. But it's like, yo, you're kind of missing the craft. Like, it's cool to be good at Twitter, it's cool to be good at Tumblr, you know, but you know, it's better to be better at rap and making music, you know. Like, that's kind of where that line came in. But, I, you know, I mean, I think you need swag, man. You need swag, too. I'm not one of these guys like, oh, you know, just run around and look like a bum all day and just you make the best music. I don't think that's going to work either, you know. But I think there's, like, a weird double standard with, like, the swag and all of that. Like, every great rapper had swag. Big Daddy Kane had swag, man. That's swag. You know what I mean? Like,
And you saw it in person. You've met
him. I ate Toe Furky at Big Daddy Kane's house with the GZA. You know what I mean? Like, Kane's definitely, like, I've definitely been lucky to have worked, and when you wear a lot of different hats in the game, you get to meet a lot of people, you know. Like, if you're just a rapper coming up, it's a bit tougher to get close to these guys. But you know, if you have other roles and can bring other things to the table, dudes will definitely like help you out in what you want to do. So I mean, Big Daddy Kane's the man, one of the illest performers, funny dude, you know, he's a legend, man.
Absolutely. One of the groups you've worked with was the whole Def Jux Collective.
Yeah,
now you were around them a lot and kind of the mid-aughts, right? 04, 05, somewhere around there? Or was
05, 04 was when I put out my like debut single with them. And then I started like working as a producer for various projects that they had going on, touring with them a lot. You know, it was awesome, man. I was a fan of Jux. So for me to be over there, especially at like an early age, like at 20, you know, it was like a dream come true for me, man.
Yeah, what was that scene like?
It was amazing. It was amazing. And I actually just did a show with Company Flow in Chicago like last month.
Nice.
And that was kind of like a little reunion-y. And you know, it's good to sort of see everyone's coming back, you know? And
yeah,
it's
like, L has this new record.
Yeah, L's killing it. And it's like Aesop's doing his thing. A lot of dudes are coming back. And, you know, I love it. You know, I don't harbor bad memories. You know, there's definitely a little bit of tension in between certain parties. But me personally, like, for me, like, you know, it was a platform to get out, and it was amazing, man. And they showed me how to build a following, and that's the main key with them.
Excellent. You know? Did you on a more personal note, did you know Camu well? Or?
I knew Camu. I did a few songs with Camu. Rest in peace, man. Yeah. We toured. Camu was amazing, man. Like, with me watching Camu, we had gone on the MERS 316 tour.
Right.
And that was like a 30-day tour. And S.A. Smash, who was Camu and Metro, they had come out with us for a few dates.
Yeah.
And Camu was amazing, man. I'm talking about, like, everyone would go to sleep. You'd wake up. He'd have, like, 8 new beats every night. And I'd just be like, yo, I don't know how this guy does it, you know? And, like, a beat CD a night. And his work ethic was crazy, man. And it's sad with Camu because I feel like in today's era, he would have really flourished, man. Like, he was a bit ahead of his time, you know? And I feel like, you know, he wasn't fully appreciated, man, while he was here. And I got much love for Camu, man. Yeah. I miss his brother.
It seems like kind of his ghost is all over L's latest record.
Yeah,
also.
You know what? And I haven't actually fully listened to L's record yet. I've been so caught up on the road. But I want to sit down with it. And, I mean, I know, you know, that hit them a lot harder. They were very close, you know, but Camu, rest in peace, man. Yeah. Good brother.
Excellent. So changing tacks for a minute, another person you worked with was Doom.
Yeah, right? Well, Doom sort of was like, he was on a posse cut I did.
Oh, okay.
On the Def Jux album, and then I did a few remixes for Doom.
Okay.
And then I was actually in one of Doom's videos. I think one of the Victor Vaughn ones. So there's like a weird connection to Doom in a lot
of
different
ways. Did you face to face?
Yeah, I met him. I met his son. Cool dude, man. Nice. Like, Doom's one of those dudes too, man. Like, just an ill rap character, you know?
Yeah.
Doom's got sweat.
Did he ever take off the mask?
Yeah, he had the mask off. Like, he's a normal dude, man. Like, you know, Doom is like a normal guy.
Impossible to imagine. No pictures though.
Nah, I mean, you know, I'm not the kind of guy like, you know, you look like a creep, man. You look like a jerk off taking pictures with everyone. Yeah. Man. I hate that.
Yeah. So a more like industry related question for you, because you've had, you know, a long career and a whole bunch of stuff. You were on Scion's record label for a while.
Oh yeah, the Sheen Brother record came out on Scion.
Yeah.
And then I did a record with 45 King. I used to run the Scion rap tours.
Oh, okay.
So we used to go around the country. That's how I met Big Daddy Kane, nice. GZA, Wu-Tang, Redman.
I was just curious about your thoughts. Yeah. There's this whole new model for record companies. Things like the Scion deal, where it's like not a traditional record company. It'll be sponsored by a car company or a clothing company or something like that. And I was just wondering about your
Scion's the best record label I've ever worked with in the sense of like business, you know, like you're not gonna get a fan base. Like Scion doesn't have like this cult following like a Def Jux, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No one's going to see the Scion, you know, label tour. But with them, you know, I think it just makes your life easier as an artist, you know. Some people are like, oh, you're selling out. I'm like, yeah, it's not selling out, man. It's like they give me creative control, man. Selling out is if you lose control, in my mind. And I don't really even know what selling out means, you know. It's another one of those underground double standards I find, you know. But I think it's dope, man. Like, there's not a lot of money left in this. So if companies want to come in and throw you figures to do records for them and shoot videos that's going to help your career and help them, why wouldn't you do it? And Scion has single-handedly kept my career afloat at certain periods of my time, you know. And I love them for that, man. And I think it's dope, man. I think, like, the more the merrier, man. You know, why not?
We'll be right back with the rest of our talk with Fourth Pyramid. You're listening to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. Welcome back to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. I'm your host, Same Old Sean. We began the second half of our conversation with Fourth Pyramid by asking him about what we thought were extensive references to Motown hits in his lyrics. I get from your lyrics that you're a big Motown fan. Ashford and Simpson, you reference Stevie Wonder and the Temptations and So Balboa.
I do.
You have the Silence Hill and Delivering Cloud Nine kind of back-to-back.
You know what? That had nothing to do with them.
Really?
It really didn't. But now that you say it, I'm a genius, man. I'm a rap genius, and that's why I'm on this site right now, man. Because,
nice.
No, I didn't even... That's amazing. Yeah, no, I meant to do that. That was...
Okay,
that was
great. Okay, good. All right. Let's
see. No, I like Motown, man. You know, I like all types of music, man. I mean, I don't like die, you know, eat and breathe Motown, but I love Motown.
Okay.
You know, who doesn't?
Yeah, you also sampled... And I know you didn't produce this track, but sampled my personal favorite singer, David Ruffin, on Feel It In My Bones.
Is that what that was?
Yeah.
He said it was a European record. That was Marco Polo. He said it's like a Norwegian cover.
Oh, well, perhaps I have it wrong. It sounded a lot like
it did. It sounded like a lot of people thought it sounded like Stand By Me, too.
Okay.
But it wasn't.
All right.
So don't sue me. But I don't know. You know what? I'm gonna hit Marco and see.
Yeah. Speaking of feeling my bones, it talks about you recovering from that car crash.
Yeah.
And that's kind of an unusual topic for a record. I can think literally of only one other rap song that deals
Through
with
the
that.
Wire?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I broke my hip, and it was one of those weird things, but it was like, you know, it was a story, man. It's an experience. So it's like, I try and just keep my rap reality-based, man. If you live a good enough life, I feel like you should have an entertaining life if you're going to be an entertaining rapper. So, yeah. I mean, breaking my hip, we just shot a video for it, and, you know, it's coming out in a week or two, and I'm excited about it. And I just want people to know, like, yo, shit happens, man, you know? And it was a heartfelt song. When you're in a wheelchair for 3 months, man, like, it's definitely something I'll never forget. So I felt like, yo, let's just... And I heard the beat, and I was like, well, this makes sense here, you know? So the beat really inspired me to write this song. But, yeah, man, I mean, it can't all be tough guy club, you know?
Yeah.
You know, we do all of that, man. I just try and make sure I touch on anything that's happened to me, you know? And I think that's the key, man, for me at least.
Excellent. Cool. So going back to all the, you know, folks you've worked with over the course of your career, is there anyone who really surprised you, either in a...
Yeah, U-God from Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah? How's that?
You know, I love U-God, man, and I love Wu-Tang. Yeah. But going into it, I didn't really know what to expect. You know, he's not the most famous member and stuff.
Right.
And I hadn't followed necessarily his solo work. But then getting in there with him, and I mean, you know, we got pretty deep into a lot of sessions. Like, we have a lot of songs that we recorded that haven't come out. But, you know, with him, you know, he's one of the people I was most surprised about because he's a dedicated writer, man. Like, he really gave me that he instilled in me, like, yo, man, you got to write. Like, you got to really, you know, you got to write, man. Like, you got to have visual lines and... You know, not this. Everyone loves the U-God verse, you know, but I didn't expect him to be like that deep into the craft.
Yeah.
Necessarily. And then you get around him and you're like, you know what? This dude's got platinum plaques. He's part of the Wu-Tang Clan, you know, top or bottom of the clan doesn't really matter. He's part of a legendary, like these guys are going to Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, right. You know? So it's like, I was most surprised by him in the studio 100% just because I think people really, you know, I don't think they fully realize, like, how deep of a writer this guy is. Like, this guy writes his ass off, man. And it surprised me. As a producer working with him, I was like, wow, this guy really, he takes his time with it, man. And I respected that.
Excellent. Speaking of taking a long time to write stuff and writing a lot of songs, you did a lot of songs for this record, right? It took you a long time to record.
Yeah, this record, you know, it was a matter of, like, doing the Def Jux thing and then that falling apart. So not really having a platform, you know, and I'm not one of these guys, I really, like, I'm not going to just release an album of me, like, rapping over, like, every hot instrumental. Like, that doesn't, you know, that's fruitless to me.
Yeah.
I took my time, man. I basically came back as, like, a brand new artist. Like, most people that hear this record, like, you sound totally different. And that's kind of what I try and do on every project, man. I don't want to, you know, what's the point of making an album that sounds the same as the last shit you put out?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it definitely took me, like, 5 years to get this album done.
Did you recorded a lot more songs than you ended up releasing?
Yeah, hell yeah. I got like 40, 50 joints in the can.
How'd you choose which ones to make the record? Like, obviously, it's not just the good ones, right? Like, there was some sort of...
It was just the good... No, I mean, you know, it was just like what felt right, man. You know, like... And that's another thing I learned, like, working with the Def Jux guys, man. It's like, it's about making a cohesive, full project, you know? And... It just was like what feels good, you know. And I wanted to make a raw rap album. That was the other thing. Like I set out to make like a raw record, and I don't think I'll ever make a record like that again. Not because I don't like it, but because, like I said, you know, I'd like to move on to something. But I want to have that in my catalog.
What do you mean? Like, what does that mean to you? A raw record?
Like hard beats, hard raps. You know, it wasn't really a pop joint.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't really a pop joint. It wasn't a dated record, but it was a hard record, you know? And in today's climate, I mean, hard is coming back, though. So it was good timing for that. But I definitely think, like, my new stuff is going to be a little more, like, you know, forward.
Yeah.
A little more probably, you know? I mean, I'm with a bigger machine now, too. And it's they're not giving me any pressure to do that. But, you know, it's like I might as well utilize the lane that I have to do it. But I'm always make, like, hard rap records because that's what I love, you know? But I like to experiment, man. Like, it probably the next album, hoping to put it out in the winter of this year, man. So I'm trying to just keep the production.
Wow, that quick?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have the my own imprint now, so I don't have to have all the red tape, you know? And that's the beauty of it. And in today's world, man, you got to kind of have two or three albums, like, going out every year to really... keep your name out there. You know what I mean? Like March is already like an old release damn near, you know? So
yeah. So this whole raw rap thing you're talking about, right? It's like something that really struck me about your record, in particular, the sound of it, was the bass tones.
Bass lines
and the sound of the bass. Because it's like
it sounds big, right?
I play bass myself. It's like it sounds retro in a good way, in that it's not like, oh my god, it sounds exactly like a Stax record, but it brings to mind associations of like 70s
R&B
records.
I'm an audio engineer too, so
for me,
like, it's gotta sound big, man. Yeah. And that's one thing I think like the major world really helped me, like, yo, okay, you're coming out now, like, these guys have stricter standards, like, you know, you can't just like record a demo at home and be like, hey guys, just put it out. So I mean, my man Agile, he's a great producer from Toronto. He's done stuff with like Nas, Method Man, and a lot of groups in Canada.
Yeah.
He helped me mix down the record, and you know, we got live bass on certain joints. And I mean, if your kick drums and your bass lines are not fat, it's not a good record, man. Yeah. It'll never be a good rap record, in my opinion. You know, so I mean, we spent a lot of time mixing it down. So I'm glad someone caught that.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned, I was reading an interview with you, and you mentioned that you like Tim Burton movies. So he definitely inspires you.
I really like Tim Burton.
Yeah.
That's an old interview, man. Yeah. What interview was that?
I don't remember. And on So Balboa, you know, you name drop Avatar and Wall Street.
Yeah, I liked Avatar.
What other movies, directors, like, what are you into now as far as movies go? Anything you've seen lately that grabbed you?
The new movie? I like The Dictator. I mean, it was racist. I tweeted about it because I'm Egyptian. I was like, yo, I'm laughing at this because it's like my heritage, but everyone else in here is laughing at this because they're racist. You know what I mean? But The Dictator was funny, man.
Yeah.
You know, I like, you know, obviously, like, you know, all the, who else? Movie-wise, who do I like? I mean, obviously, like, the usuals, like the Kubricks, you know, the Blade Runners, the, you know what I mean, the Hunter S., you know, all of them, man. Like, I'm inspired by films, but I'm really more inspired by music, you know?
Yeah. So who's been, I know you just moved back to Toronto.
Yeah.
And who there is inspiring you?
I mean,
what's
The Weeknd is killing
there.
It. My little man's Able, The Weeknd. I mean, they've taken it to a huge level. My little man, Rich Kid, who did a bunch of beats on my album, he's really about to pop off in the producer world. He's a dope rapper too. I mean, Toronto's just crazy right now because it's like the first time I parallel it to like what Drake did is like what Eminem did for Detroit, you know? And it's like, it wasn't just Eminem. It was like all these underground dudes, like Slum came up. Dilla was around, but Dilla really got a spotlight. And it's just like, it takes that one guy sometimes to get a spotlight on your city. And now it's like a ton of us just trying to get out there and get our names out. Like when I first signed in New York, they were trying to convince me to, like, just, yo, why don't we just keep Toronto off the bio? And I kind of had to fight to be like, yeah. They're like, well, you live in New York now. Let's just, you know what I mean? I was like, yeah, but I'm a Toronto guy. So it's funny because now they're like, you're from Toronto? Like, I love Toronto, you know? You're like, yeah. So I've seen that happen, and it's dope, man. It's amazing. But at the same time, like, it ain't no New York, man. Like, it's not, you know, you can't run around and do, like, you know, you can't run into 20 people in Toronto in a day that are going to help your career. You know, whereas in New York, you could go to the right place, right time, and make it happen. But, I mean, I don't know, man. I feel like with the internet, I could be damn near anywhere at this point, you know. But Toronto's on fire right now, man. It's definitely a good time to be out there.
And just to wind down a little bit, what's coming up for you now? What's in the pipeline for you?
Well, we got the Feel It in My Bones video. That's next on deck. Doing some tour dates this summer. I got, you know, tour dates with Talib Kweli, tour dates with Elzai, who another Detroit guy.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so we're actually going to do New York City, I believe July 19th at SOBs. So just really touring the record, man, pushing the record into the summer. And then I'd like to put out my new album in December, like I said, winterish. And I believe the working title right now is The Sky Belongs to the Stars. That's where I kind of want to go with it. And we're just starting to put that record together now, man. So, you know, just working, man, working hard, man, trying to stay productive.
Excellent. And finally, obviously, because this is an interview for Rap Genius, before you mentioned you were familiar with the site.
Yeah, I love
the
site,
man. I was
hoping
we'd get your thoughts on it.
I mean, the site is amazing, man. It's a dope idea, and it's like, it's a rap nerd site, you know, and it's like, you know, the best fans are nerds, man. And I love it because as a lyricist and a writer, I like to look up lyrics and just read other people's lyrics, you know, and then to have the explanations and the fans doing it. It's just dope, man. It's just a dope idea. And I mean, it helps you as an artist, you know, it helps me as an artist. And it helps you as a fan. I mean, I think it's a pretty genius idea, man.
Excellent. No pun intended. We'll have to get you a verified account.
Yeah, I'm gonna do it. I wanna definitely put up a few of my songs and explain them, man.
Excellent. Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. I'm same old Sean. Fourth Pyramid.
The Pyramid
Scheme.
See
you next time.
Peace.
You've been listening to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. If you're curious about any of the songs mentioned on this show, you can see Fourth Pyramid's own verified artist Rap Genius account at rapgenius.com/fourthpyramid. Rap Genius is dedicated to decoding, annotating, and analyzing hip-hop lyrics. Join us next week when we talk to a man who truly needs no introduction, Nas. Outside the Lines with Rap Genius is hosted and written by Sean Sitaro, a.k.a. Same Old Sean. You can reach me with your thoughts about the show via Twitter. I'm at Same Old Sean. That's S-H-A-W-N. This interview was recorded by Dan Berger. The podcast was engineered by Brian Penny at the beautiful Three Egg Studios in Brooklyn, New York. Intro and outro music by Psionic. Interlude music by Sir Loin. Special thanks to Nicole Witte Solomon. I'm your host, Same Old Sean, and I'll see you next week on Outside the Lines with Rap Genius.